And it is recording.
Okay, my name is Sue Ford, and I moved into New Milford in 1975 when I was 21 years old.
And when did you come here?
My husband and I bought our first house here. He grew up in Bethel. I grew up on Long Island, but when we went looking for a house, this was an affordable place to buy our first home, and it's been our only home.
Was it just the economics of it, or was there something that attracted you about New Milford?
Well, New Milford was a pretty town, and I felt it would be a nice town to raise a family in. I loved the green.
Right.
And, you know, once I was living here, I loved it even more.
So you think you were right? Was it a good time to raise
it? I think especially the time period that we were in, it was a good time to
raise it. So you're putting a stipulation on it. Why do you say just the time period?
I'm a little worried now about some, but I think it's in Connecticut, it's kind of like this everywhere. You know, more kids are getting into drugs and more things that are happening like that. But we were here in a really nice... We started at a nice time, you know. I've talked to you before about things that have happened over the course of time. When we first moved in, the things were easier going. People got to know each other a little better. Mm-hmm. When I would buy, when we first moved, we were house poor, because we just bought our first house. And shortly after that, we were only here a couple of years, and, we had our son Matthew, so we had a brand new baby. And so sometimes, we were living paycheck to paycheck. And so things like when I needed to get a prescription if Matt had a, ear infection or something like that, that could be a lot of money for us to have to put out. So I remember at Sloan's Pharmacy, Mr. Sloan we opened an account so that we could put whatever we needed on account. I knew if I needed some medicine or something, I could get it when I needed it and not have to worry about money, and we paid that monthly. And so that was a nice thing. And then things that happened, like if you when I'd shop regularly at Maury's grocery store, the IGA, and Mr. Maury would help you bring your groceries out if you needed. There were always kids that helped you bring your groceries out. And it was always like kind of a nice feeling. And one day I went to buy my groceries, and when I opened up my checkbook, because you didn't use credit cards or anything like that, you either had cash or your checkbook. And I opened up my checkbook, and I didn't have a check left. I'd used the last one and didn't put a new thing in. So I thought, man, I'm going to have to, go home and whatever. And the girl who was checking me out, she said, "That's okay, Mrs. Ford. I'll write up a slip for you. You pay next time you're in." I don't think that would happen today. And things like that would happen. One time I accidentally, it was an accident, wrote a check for a pair of shoes at Markoff Shoes, which is no longer there. It was over next to, it was next to the post office. Okay. And it was a nice shoe store, and I was buying a pair of shoes. I don't know if it was for me or Matt, but I wrote a check. And a couple days later, I got a call, and they said, "Mrs. Ford, your check came back." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, what happened?" And I looked, and I had done a number reversal when you flip it, and I added wrong. And like I said, we were living close to the edge there, so at that point, it was an next paycheck had come in, and I said, "I'm coming right down. I'll give you the cash." And they just gave me my check back. I gave them the cash. They laughed about it. I laughed about it when I told them I reversed the numbers, and they didn't ban me from the store or not let me write a check the next time. It was it was an accident. A lot of the stories I remember from when Matt were little have to do with downtown when I was shopping or doing things like. A lot of them at the Sloan's. I remember one time, this is a little bit, but I was in there and Matt was in it. They used to have the little umbrella strollers that were kind of low to the ground. And so I was talking to the girl as I was buying something, and they kept the feminine products up near the cash register. And apparently Matt, and they were underneath, and Matt reached out and grabbed something, but we didn't notice. So I leave the store, I'm heading down Bank Street, and I run into a friend, and she's talking to me, and she looks at Matt, and she says, "What does he have in his hand?" He was there with a little box of Tampax. And I was like, "Oh." So we turned around and went back. Went back into the store, and I said, My baby took these, and so they took them right back, put them on the shelf. Things like, that now you might have had the police come running after you or something. Then one time, my wayward child. He was about three, and they would have little toys and stuff by the cash register, and he saw a little eraser top thing that he took a fancy to. And he's maybe 3 and a half because he was talking pretty well. And he said, "Mommy, can I get that?" I said, "No, honey, not today. We don't have extra for that right now." And apparently he took quite a shine to it, because that night Michael and I went out somewhere, and we had our neighbor who was babysitting, Donna. And she, you know, when I got home, she said, "Mrs. Ford," I said, "what?" She said, "I want to tell you something." She says, "because it was kind of weird." I said, "Okay." When you were gone, Matt brought out this little eraser, and he says, "Look what I have." He says, "but don't tell my mommy." So it was like, oh. So when I found out, of course, the next morning when Matt got up, I said, "where did this come from?" And he was like, you know, "I took it." I said, "oh, Matt," I said, "that's the wrong thing to do." So I put him in the car, and we drove down to downtown, and went in, and I asked to speak to Mr. Sloan, and he came out, and I said, "Matt, you need to tell Mr. Sloan what you did." And so he had, you know, the whole thing. He said, "you know, I took this." And I said, you know, and I kind of looked at Mr. Sloan. Mr. Sloan said, "well, Matthew, that was not a right thing to do, and I hope you'd never do anything like that again." And, you know, we put it back, and that was the end of it. But Matt, you know, was very embarrassed and very upset. And I, as far as I know, he's never done anything like that again. So, I mean, you know, things that happened in town with people that, you know, people knew you. And I think there's a little less of that now. I think people, like I said, if we went into the store now, nobody would say, "well, that's okay, Mrs. Ford will write a charge." Mm-hmm. You know, for most places.
Right.
You know, so there are a lot of things like that.
Do you think... So it always occurs to me, I've said this time and time again in these interviews, like, yeah. New Milford is really an agglomeration of villages, right? I mean, with very distinct identities.
That's true.
Northville, Mariel. Mm-hmm. And downtown, which houses all of our civic organizations, has always sort of been the glue that binds these places together. And do you think this loss of, I'm going to say community, just because I hate saying that, but just this loss of community that you're sort of alluding to, do you think it's because of the struggles that downtown has had?
You know, that would make some sense. I mean, because when I was first here, that's where we, I mean, you know, you shopped off the green a little bit, but you know, the groceries weren't right on the green.
Right. Was Finest on the green when you came here?
No, they had moved over to, well, actually it wasn't Finest.
It was First National, right?
First National became Finest, mm-hmm. became... Edwards,
yeah.
I think, after that. And then, was it something after Edwards before it was Big Y? But it took me all the way to till it became Big Y to start saying Big Y. Because in between things, I'd be going over to either First, and I call it, you know, First National or Finest, even right. when it was other things, and, you know, I'm going to Finest.
Yeah.
But the thing, you know, things on the green, I think we came in to get our... If you needed your drugs,
mm-hmm. drugs.
We, you know, but if we needed drugs, we came to downtown. If you needed shoes, I mean, you know, I came and I got them at Markoff Shoes. If you needed, I shopped a lot at Bobbitt's health food. They were down on Bank Street. Hearts.
Hearts.
It was always so much fun at Hearts, and they had everything from, you know, but the kitchen sink, and they might have had a kitchen sink in the basement.
Can you talk a little bit about Hearts? No one has really talked about
really?
It.
Really?
Judy
Hearts?
Mentioned it.
Hearts was of course it didn't cost 5 and 10 cents then, but it was like a 5 and 10 cent store. They had sewing supplies, they had underwear, they had coloring books, they had candies and gum. They had my friend Rob said his mom actually had a kerosene lamp, and that, you know, she's trying to find a chimney for, mm-hmm. because the chimney broke, and she went in there, and this was in the 70s, and Mr. Carrier looked at the broken one. She says, "oh yeah, I have some of those," and went into downstairs, and the room came back with, you know, and she took about three of them because she was afraid she couldn't buy them anymore. Like I said, sewing notions, socks. I mean, you know, they were like, I remember them having plastic models and a few toys.
My brother bought his first model rocket there.
Yeah. I mean, it was like there was a little bit of most everything. You could get downstairs, there were things like, you know, you could get like some pots and pans, glasses, a few, you know, little dishes and things like that. When I first started working here at the library, if I needed craft supply, glue, crayon, you know, I mean, like, right. I could walk over there. They had those big rolls of vinyl that you could get, either like for vinyl tablecloths or, you know, and it was handy because you could just run right over there. And when they first, closed, I missed that, because that was and there were nice people that worked there. Carol worked there, and she's, Carol. Why can't I think of her last name?
Carol Denny Caldwell. Caldwell.
Yeah, Carol Caldwell. She was a nice, nice lady.
She's wonderful.
And, you know, we'd go in there a lot. And then, now, here's another Matt story. He did not steal anything from there. But I found out later, he told me, when he'd come down and spend, like, a Saturday or something with me at the library, he'd ask, could he go over to Hart's, and I'd give him a little money to go over and get something. And so he'd go over, and when he was, like, in sixth or seventh grade, because he was going to Scaticoke, he would buy things like Airheads or Sour Patch Kids or something like that. And then apparently he was selling them at school when at, like, twice the price. And being an entrepreneur and earning a little extra money, and I didn't know he was doing that, but he was, you know, not right. just buying stuff for himself. But it was a really nice five and dime store. And
it strikes me, again, you talk about Mr. Carrier, and it's another face to that community that was downtown.
Right. And Carol, like, although I just couldn't remember her name, but Carol Caldwell, and the people that had, you know, there was little clothing stores. There was a Countdown for Kids that had great children's clothing, because it was like there was like a little, they made it into like a little mall over for a while where later became CVS, and now it's like open, nothing's in there now.
Yeah.
But that had like some little stores in it.
Did it really?
Yeah. It had some little, and Countdown was in there for a while. It was also, I think it was on Bank Street for a while too, but that was children's clothes.
Okay.
And they had nice, you know, like Carter's children's clothes, and it was reasonable. I got a lot of Matt's clothes there, and that was closed by the time Lainey came along. But there was Countdown, and there was a really cool little store that sold things from other countries.
Mai Tai.
Mai Tai, and she had great earrings. And I'm trying to think what else was when I first moved in, there was another pharmacy at the end of the bank, down the bottom of the bank, Laudiers. Mm-hmm. But I didn't tend to go into Laudiers. It was like, it's that much more of a walk or something. But I didn't go in there.
What about Barton's?
Barton's, I'd go into Barton's, and Barton's had downstairs they had like a little, they called it, like, you know, kids' play area that the kids could play in while you were shopping. Mm-hmm. And you could leave your kid in there just playing while you were doing shopping.
Right.
And they had upstairs, they had clothes, and they also had there were some type of furniture things. I mostly at Barton's, I tended to get things like, I think they had like lamps and I'm trying to think what other things that, I'm trying to remember if there was fabric there for a while too. Isn't that funny? I don't remember exactly.
My mom would be able to tell
you
because she worked there.
Yeah, she worked there. And but yes, I did go into Barton's, and I'm trying to think of the different things along the way. We would, things drew us. I think you're right. Drew us to the green that aren't there. Of course, the library.
so speak to that. You came to town. Do you work? Was this your first job outside of, as in the library world, I guess?
When I was young, I worked as a page.
Okay.
In other places. But when I came to New Milford, it was the first job that I ever had full time in a library. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, I was part time. And I went from, starting off part-time, that I worked a little at the main desk. I helped out in the back with tech services. I worked when the bookkeeper was away. I did bookkeeping. I mean, it was more, you know, like, so when the bookkeeper was going on, Joanne Goldthwait was bookkeeper at that point. And when she went on vacation, she had shown me how to do the checkbook. So while she was, I wrote checks and put things in the in the files and everything like that for her.
Right.
So I covered bookkeeping. I did tech services. I did a story hour in the children's room. I did stuff at the main desk. I remember one time there was a young girl who was like doing summer help for us. I mean, she wasn't like one of our regular, and she was working and helping behind the back desk, and she fainted or passed out or something, and she was lying on the floor behind the main desk. And the acting director at that time, Jean Stamm, she said, we called the ambulance, just kind of work. So I remember I was like stepping over her while I was helping people out. And of course, we were using cards and everything then for the library. So I went from that to there was a full time was 35 hours a week then. And so there was a 28-hour a week reference. It wasn't full time then. So I went and did that for 28 hours a week for maybe 6 months. And then the tech services department came open in the back, and I became head of the tech services at 35 hours a week full time, and did that maybe a couple years, because I started here at the library in 1980 part time, and in 1983 I think went full time, and then in 1987 is when I went up to the children's room.
Yeah, so how is the library? I mean, you've obviously changed positions.
Oh, yeah. And when I first started, this room we're in now, this was the staff room.
Oh, is it really?
The Connecticut room was the staff room. See that little thing in there? There was like one of those kitchenette type things where they have like a built-in, there was a stove and a little refrigerator and stuff. And so we would come, and we usually, most of us ate lunch at the same time. There was like one person at the desk, and one person in children's, while we were eating, and a lot of us would come in here and we'd eat, and we had the door shut, but we'd see the glass thing, and had a lot of fun. It was a nice group. There was our director at that time was Nick Fogarty, and I was head of tech services. Judy Horgan at that time came, and she was they changed reference to full time, so she was head of reference. And Danielle, I think Danielle Darnell was still here she changed to Danielle Clark as a children's librarian for a while, and then it was Barbara Rapp who was our children's librarian. So I've been through a lot of different directors. Jean Stamm was acting director when I first started. Then there was Nick Fogarty. Then there was Alan Denkirk. And then who came after Alan? Was it Judy after Alan? I think it was Judy. And then after Judy was Barbara Ostertag Holtkamp. And after Barbara was Lorraine Care Faison. And after Lorraine was Carl. And then after Carl was Mark for a while. And between Carl and Mark, I was acting for a few months. And then after Mark, I was acting director until Sally took over, Sally Turno. And I didn't want to be director. I love what I do in the children's room. So I've been in the children's room since 1987. Seen a lot of kids go through. I have kids of kids now, and I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I was headhunted for a few other libraries. People would come after me, which is nice. But I didn't want to leave New Milford.
Why?
I wanted to be... Well, first of all, I just loved watching the kids that I worked with grow, and that really appealed to me. Plus, my own kids were going to school here, and so I knew if something happened, I could get to them quick.
Right.
So that was important to me too. But I really, it's not that I couldn't have gotten another job, and maybe made a little more money. But I like community. I do. I like. Watching people grow. I watched you grow.
Right.
and I have a lot of fun stories. Mr. John Noble, you know that, from when you were working on The Courage, Sarah Noble. And it just, I don't know, some days you go home and you go like, do I make any difference? And then there's other days things have happened where people have come back, kids that have graduated or moved away, and they come back and they'll walk in, and lots of times there's a lot of them I look up and I recognize them, and I'll say, oh, and say hi and say their name, and they're like, you remember me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, lots of times I do, as long as I came in consistently. Because
right.
sometimes kids, if they change a lot how they look if they're little and they don't come back till later. But if they, you know, came right through high school, I usually recognize them. And they're you know, they're happy to see me. I'm happy to see them.
It's sort of your means of maintaining that sense of community.
I think it has a lot to do with that. I mean, also I love children. I love books. I love what
I do. Absolutely, absolutely.
But I really have been, you know, because let's face it, you know, it's not the highest paid job in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm okay and everything, but it's like, it's not for the pay.
Right.
It's not for the pay. It's because I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. I think, you know, it's I don't know, making a safe place, I think, for kids to come, a place that they feel like, you know, there's a consistency. For a lot of kids, there's not a consistency in life.
Right.
And this has been a fairly consistent, you know, it's getting awful crowded.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of things that have changed in the way we've configured things. You know, but we haven't gotten more space.
Right, right. No, absolutely.
yeah. So we've, you know, I mean, because I remember when I first started in the children's room, maybe they were doing a couple story hours a week. And by the time, you know, and when there was a lot of kids, and we were doing something like 15, 16 story hours a week.
Was that out of necessity, or is that, I guess, you can, don't be humble in this, how have you changed the children's room programming?
Well, when I first, I think by offering more and doing a good program,
yeah.
People, you know, if you build it, they will come. So that built up for a long time. Now, right now, what I see happening is because of all day kindergarten, that, you know, I lost my 5-year-olds for
right.
story hour. I mean, there's things that have brought things to needing less program because there's less kids to
right.
have programs for. More families are having the kids in all day daycare.
Right.
So part of what I do now is go out to some of the daycares and visit children there, so they'll come in the evening.
Right.
Lots of times if I go out, they'll go and say, "Mommy, can we go to the library?" You know, because usually the kids have had fun if
yeah.
I go out and visit with them.
Well, I think that's sort of indicative of, I think the important thing about community now, and it's just speaking broadly, is that it's so easy to just be like introverted too, because we have these devices that we're looking at all the time. We have computers.
Mm-hmm.
We have this simulated community like Facebook, social media, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for organizations, which are, like I said earlier, the glue that holds community together,
mm-hmm.
to work and to maintain that community, they need to build bridges, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's amazing that the library does that.
Yeah.
Because that's really, the library has always been, in my view, one of the things that libraries struggle with, and I could be wrong, I mean, you're a librarian,
yeah.
is that they've always been very inward-looking.
Yeah, yeah.
And to succeed, and many libraries are doing this now, it's not nothing new.
Yeah.
They need to look outward.
We have to make people aware of what we do have still here.
We're still relevant.
Yeah, that you know, and you know, I still think books are really, really important. In fact, some studies they're doing now, kids still prefer to read books.
Mm-hmm.
Young people don't like their devices as much sometimes as older people, so they still like books, and you know, they need to know that we're here also for gaming. I mean,
right.
we have some of the different things that we have here that they can't get in other places,
right.
you know, programming and to learn how to use the different devices that they have in a way that's going to be helpful,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you can go out on the internet and, you know, there's a lot of garbage out there,
yeah.
and they need to learn, don't use Wikipedia. To at least, and you can look at Wikipedia as an adult, I look sometimes
mm-hmm.
to find out things about, you know, like who's this pop group or something.
Right.
But don't use that for your schoolwork. But we do go out to the schools. We go out to the nursery schools, the daycares. I belong to the Early Education Council, which is a council of the daycare people and nursery school people and librarians and people who work with children up through kindergarten. That's a group that meets, and so that we all are aware of what we're doing for each other.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things that we can work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're still relevant.
I think we're very, very relevant.
That's an argument for me. And I'm you know, but we do have to reinvent some of it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're stagnant.
Absolutely.
And we don't want that. I don't want to be stagnant. So I don't know. Anything else you want to ask me?
I mean, how do you feel that the library has? What is the library's place within the community? I guess.
Well, okay. I think we have changed more. You know, we're still a place to get recreational reading. That's an important thing. But I think we're also a place to and we have been. But I think we're getting more so to be the information hub. You know, and not just for reference questions, but we have people come from other places. They come in, they say, I came to the library because I knew you'd be able to help.
Mm-hmm.
Either we help them find the needs, you know, help them find where they can go get health needs or where they can get other things outside. Or if they're visiting, they come in and say, I'm from out of town, I want to find it. Where's a good place to go?
Mm-hmm.
Where's a place to go eat, or where's you know, what's a interesting thing for us to visit? We've been working in conjunction with the observatory, you know, the McCarthy Observatory. For a while, we have their little passports,
yeah,
so that, you know, people come and go and use their when they go to the different places, the sun or whatever, like, you know,
yeah.
And they say, you know, been there. When they finish their passports, they bring them back and we stamp that they're an official McCarthy observatory person or whatever. So I mean, like, you know, in fact a few years ago I had a family come from the Midwest who said they heard about the, you know, scale model.
Oh, cool.
Of the universe and of the solar system, not the universe. That'd be pretty big. A scale model of the solar system that we had here. And they came purposely to New Milford for their vacation.
Wow.
To see that. And I thought that was really cool. The sad thing now is some of the things have been stolen because...
Oh, really?
Some of the planets have been stolen, not their pedestal, but because they were made out of brass. And I'm really upset about that because there's always some people who will ruin everything.
Yeah.
It's such a cool thing that we have.
Yeah.
To have that. So, I mean, we tell people about that. We are, I think we've almost become more of a community center. Not more of, but the library's more of a community center than it used to be.
Right.
Okay. And so we still have our traditional functions. And I think... we're a learning center. I mean, Erin does all her things about people who need to learn how to use their iPods or how to navigate the internet or mm-hmm. use their computer.
Be older digital people, citizens.
Yeah. Older people especially, you know, they get their first iPad and it's like, I don't know what to do with this.
Right.
And she's great.
Yeah.
And she's doing a good job of that. So I think, you know, digital literacy mm-hmm. for adults. And we still have the privilege of having these things be free.
Right. That's key.
That's, you know, I've always felt, you know, because some people have said, well, why don't you charge for some of your programs? And I say, you know, the libraries have always been the great equalizer. And, you know, people could be wealthy or they could be poor, but they'll come get the same service.
Right.
And that's still... I think it's still important today. We have to charge some to use a copy machine because we can't afford. But if a kid comes in and needs something on the copy machine for school and they don't have money, I'll make sure they get it.
Right.
But I mean, you know, but it's they can learn things, experience things, have great programming, and we're not charging anybody.
Right.
And I think that's important.
So I have two more things, and then I'll let you get back to work.
Okay.
One I haven't done with anybody else, and I think it's a good question. So ideally, this archive will last forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you had something to say, or you had a vision for what our community or the library will be 100 years down the road.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
No. Okay. You can take some time to think.
Right.
It's fine. I just... What do you see for our future? What do you see for the future of the library?
I hope
of
that,
New Milford.
I hope that we will continue to be the central place for learning. I know schools are teaching children, but what I mean is for learners of all ages.
Right.
Okay. That we continue to be a place where families and people could come for enjoyment, education, learning, socializing, with the people in town. I think that is going to be, and that it will continue to be free.
Mm-hmm.
That will be still here to hold our, when we're in the Connecticut Room here, we have the history of New Milford, and that people will come to find out, about the history. We did, this is off the subject a little bit, sort of on there, back in 1998 when we had the 100th anniversary of the library.
It was really special.
It was. We had a lot of fun. And we did we called it a time capsule, but it's in a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we put stuff in that we thought, they're going to open in 100 years. I'm going to give a little preview. No. But there were some things I put in and asked kids to help put in. And at that point, I think Harry Potter had just come out, the Harry Potter series. It was the first one, and it hadn't, totally blown up yet. And I got a copy of that, and I said, I'm going to put a copy of that in. And I wrote a little note that I thought that was going to be an important book, and that it might still be maybe read in 100
right.
years from 1998.
Right.
I don't know, but I thought that was kind of cool.
That's really cool.
The kids brought stuff, like we put a Barbie doll in there, and we put a little Matchbox car. Christopher, we did it now. This is almost 20 years later, there'd be different types of things that we put in there. But,
is it buried?
It's not buried.
Okay.
But we've got it closed.
Yeah.
We haven't opened it.
Yeah,
It's a trunk, and it's here in the library. But that was our time capsule.
Really cool.
And adults put different things in it,
Did you put the infamous green library card in there?
I think we might have put a green library card in there. Yeah, I didn't do it, but I think Judy might have.
Right.
Because Judy was our director then. So, hopefully they'll open the time capsule in 100 years and get a good laugh at that. But I think, I'm hoping that this, society will still view a library as a center.
Relevant.
That would be my hope.
And then my other thing is a statement. So you talked all about these people, people at Sloan's, the gentleman at Sloan's, who, Mr. Carrier, Carol Caldwell.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've realized that you're one of those people now. You're one of these figureheads that people think of that really links the community together. And I think that's really special.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. That's sort of it's a really nice feeling. It's kind of scary. But thank you.
So I think we'll stop there, and I really appreciate it.
All right.